It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
Ready? There you go. All right, that signals that it's time for California Wine Country on this Wine Wednesday. Brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. Dan Berger, of course, my co-host, is here. And today, Alan Baker is back with us from Cartograph Wines. Good to see you, man.
It's good to see you. This is a lot of fun.
So that's a sparkling.
Yes, this is our brew.
I could tell from the pop of the cork.
Well, I hope it is then.
So I didn't realize you were making sparkling wine.
This is our very first bubbles.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a 2013 vintage sparkling wine from the Russian River Valley.
Rosé?
It is a Brut Rosé, but the base wine is 100% Chardonnay, and then we added like 1.5% Pinot just for that little touch of salmon color and a teeny bit of sugar at the dosage that we did in 2018.
That's adorable.
Yeah, so it's
adorable.
You don't hear that much.
Tasty wine.
Very much.
Oh, this wine's adorable.
Your thoughts, Dan?
Terrific acidity, as every good bubbly has to have. And again, like I said in my article a couple of weeks ago, it should be best with food. It's really got flavors. It's got real – I mean, the Pinot actually comes through.
What it does.
1% or something?
It's 1.5%. And the funny thing is we made the base wine, the Chardonnay. We made that base wine and then put it down to age on the lees for a solid 4 years. So it sat there a long time. And then we pulled the wine out, split the lot in half, and bottled half of it this way with a little bit of Pinot and half of it with no additions and no dosage. Call that a Brut Zero. And if you think the acid's screaming on this, that Brut Zero is nuts.
I got to throw a minor geek alert on dosage. Because I do that all the time because a lot of people go, what? Isn't that horses?
Yeah, no, yeah. No.
Dressage. That's dressage.
Dressage. Yeah. Dressage.
Okay.
So dosage is a sort of a French term, I guess you could call it, is the sugar addition that you add just before you put the cork in so that wine is actually aged pretty much dry, completely dry, with very high acidity and a very nice low pH. The secret to the dosage is to soften it. Because you don't want too much acidity showing up in the front of the wine. And some people will age these, which I typically do not like to do with champagne, because champagne and sparkling wines tend to you don't know how much oxygen you're smelling. You can't be sure. So if you smell a wine when it's young and you're not sure what the oxygen is, just drink it.
Yeah. Drink it now. I want to get the backstory, the history of Cartograph Wines. Alan Baker's with us, and you and Serena Laurie founded Cartograph.
Yes.
You worked in Minnesota for NPR.
Yes, I was a radio engineer for 15-plus years.
Wow.
That's where I was living when I got bit by the bug. It was a dry Riesling that got me hooked, and I just got so far in, I couldn't turn back. Yep. I was actually in the middle of a lake in my kayak.
And... your partner was in healthcare and venture capital.
Yes.
Is she still involved? Are you guys married? What's going on?
As of, this is a breaking, as of last Wednesday, we are married. Now a week.
Nice. Well, congratulations.
So anybody listening that didn't know that, nobody else knew either.
So one bottle of wine, what'd you say it was?
It was a 98 Alsace Riesling, bone dry. Not expensive, not a famous producer, but it just totally captivated
me. And you're in your
me.
Kayak drinking this, yep. And you're going, I'm going to make wine.
No, I just knew that I wanted to explore, and I just got deeper and deeper in until finally I'm like, okay, if I'm going to spend my entire day thinking about it, I'm just going to go give it a shot. So I moved to Healdsburg in 2005 and just started knocking on doors.
So you didn't go to UC Davis or Fresno or anything?
No. I just started knocking on doors, and Mick Unti and Fred Peterson, both in Dry Creek Valley, gave me my first kind of gigs in the vineyard and in the winery. And basically my pitch to them. So I needed a shtick to get my foot in the door. So what I started a wine blog and an audio podcast. And so basically my pitch to them was that if they gave me work, they'd get exposure through the productions and stuff like that. So that's how I kind of got my foot in the door. And National Public Radio picked up that podcast midway through that season. So that kind of made it so that anybody I wanted to ask a question, I could knock on their door and they'd say yes, because National Public Radio was behind me. So that kind of helped elevate the podcast.
How long ago did you start all this?
2005.
Okay, and the first vintage at Cartograph?
Would be, I started a brand at a place called Crush Pad in San Francisco that did custom winemaking for clients like myself who wanted to start a brand but didn't have deep pockets.
Yeah.
And because my wine blog was called the Cellar Rat, so, you know, Cellar Rat's the schlub that has to do all the scrubbing in the winery since making wine is 99% scrubbing things down. My first brand was called Cellar Rat Cellars. And so I made 100 cases of Pinot and sold it as futures to my podcast and blog audience. And that's how I funded my first vintage of wine.
Which but you are now the winemaker at
Cartograph. I am, yeah. And so I got hired to work at Crush Pad after making my first wine there.
Wow.
And that's where I really got my hands-on skills and have been back to UC Davis to kind of backfill with some classes in their continuing education.
So Cartograph, to you, Dan, run it down.
It's an adventurous little project. Moving into Western Sonoma County, you pretty much have to make Pinot Noir. Everybody wants to make Pinot Noir, so getting fruit is really, really tricky. So Alan eventually planted some of his own fruit so that they'd have a source of grapes, because if you don't have that source and you have to hunt around from year to year to year, you're looking at a different source. Their style is going to be different every year. Mm-hmm. So the consistency was what counted for you. And we've tasted these wines over the years, and now you're making a little Riesling and Gewürztraminer. The Gewürz is always a – where do you get that Gewürz fruit?
It's from a vineyard that used to be called Floodgate. It's now called Starscape. It sold in 2013, so it's right at the southern end of the Middle Reach section of the Russian River Valley.
That's a nice vineyard, because the aromatics in that are right, like gardenias and carnations.
Yeah, you had like – both Riesling and Gewürz have to be in the right location, or you can't really do that dry style. You know, you might not get the aromatics you're looking for, or the sugar might bolt on you before, you know, before you can get the grapes out of there. So, yeah, that site is very special.
Yeah,
I love it.
I like. Now, what is this? Is this a Pinot?
This is Pinot. You know, you had a nerd alert. This might just continue throughout our conversation, but this is. A single clone of Pinot Noir. It's the 777 clone from our estate property. And so what we did is in the spring of 2018, we released clonal-specific wines. They're made from a single clone from a single block. Took a couple rows of each clone, vinified them separately. So you can taste the various clones, and then you can taste the estate blend, which is what we'll have next. But for a single clone, I feel like this is a pretty well-rounded version of Pinot.
It's delicious, a 2016 Pinot.
Now, ideally the wine is called just Pinot Noir, and when he talks about the clones, he's actually not talking about an actual clone. He's talking about a selection. This is a grape variety, Pinot Noir. There's a grape variety that really has a tremendous ability to sort of change itself in the vineyard. It's sort of a transmogrification, if you will. Wow. And so each of these selections...
I don't believe we've ever used that word on the show in 10 years.
I love that word.
No, I like it. It's cool.
And so we see these different changes in the vineyard, and they are also typed in France. So the French have done this for probably about 75 or 100 years. And so this clone 777 is one of those selections, a fairly new selection that's been available in the United States probably only for the last, 25 years or so.
Yeah, I think it was in the 70s when they were having a disease pressure in Burgundy, and they went looking for disease-free clones, and then that's when they actually started this isolation process, I think.
This is very exciting wine. This is really dramatic because...
Am I getting a lot of floral here?
Yeah, there's a lot of floral, but it's also a very, very young wine. It has that little hint of blackberries amid this strawberry component. The strawberry is really dominating it.
Yeah, and the site, this location for this vineyard is out. It's officially in the Russian River Valley Appellation, or AVA, but it is right up against the Petaluma Gap, the new AVA Petaluma Gap, which is – it's cold, it's windy, it's a challenging place to grow fruit, which
that's
I think
hear,
in those cold locations, that's when you get those really floral, pretty light-bodied aromas.
Well, this is beautiful.
Thank you very much.
16 – Pinot.
Yeah, 2016.
Way too young.
Dan lay it down burger for 20 years or whatever. I don't know.
Well, I would say a wine like this is sort of splits the difference. You've got some youthful characteristics in the aroma, but you've also got some depth fairly much of an intense mid palate. So that means that this wine does have some real future to it. Now, the question is how long? Pinot Noir typically doesn't go much more than about 10 to 12 years. So this is right at the 10-year mark, I think, and then you'll start to want to drink it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair.
I want to drink it now, Dan.
Well, I'm drinking it.
God.
Do you have much distribution on this particular wine?
We sell almost all of our wine direct to consumer or from our tasting room.
Nothing at Bottle Barn?
We have nothing at Bottle Barn, but we should rectify that, I suppose.
Yes, you should. And we can help, okay. Believe me. It is the California,
they're listening.
California Wine Country brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. I don't know. So you guys have a winery now.
Yes.
I mean,
well,
is there a tasting room? I mean,
our tasting room is downtown Healdsburg. We're just right off the square, just north of the square on Center Street, right next to Valette Restaurant, if people know where that is often.
Dustin, the man.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, we've been there since 2013, and it's a great way to stay connected with everybody. We have a very long... strong local following, and a lot of industry members are in our club, which is gratifying as a winemaker to have that kind of endorsement.
Join the club at cartographwines.com. Anything else you can tell me about how I like this wine as young as it is, Dan?
Well, I think we've seen a lot of wineries who produce Pinot Noir releasing them slightly earlier than they have been in the past. Part of the reason is that when they're good, they're sold out. So you can't be off the shelf and you can't be off the wine list. So they release them early. But if you get it a little extra time in the bottle, you start to see this. If this wine were released a year from now, it would be much more approachable. It would be easier to drink. The problem is that you have this wine. It has such a vibrancy to it that this wine is going to be radically different in 12 months. And right now what we're seeing is I started to go back and re-review some of the 2012s. Now, the 10s and 11s came from cooler years, so I wasn't concerned about those. But the 12s I was concerned about, went back and tasted about 10 of them, and they're just so much better than they were when they were released. So this is a good example of what's happened. 15 was a small crop.
Yes.
We had a lot of concentration in 14 and 15. This is the first look at the 16s, very impressive wines.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of wine consumers like the fruit forwardness of a younger wine.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to drink, 14s right about now. Mm-hmm. That said, we drink a lot of this 777 and the other clones in our house too.
If you, as young as this is it decantable?
Absolutely, okay. Steve. In fact, that was the whole thing about what's happening with these early releases. Everybody now, including the winemakers, are finally admitting, yeah, it's a little early, but if you just put it in a decanter for an hour, you're fine. And that word really didn't get repeated very much back about 7 or 8 years ago. People didn't want to admit that they were releasing the wine soon.
Right.
But Cabernet Sauvignon used to be on a 4.5-year cycle.
Right.
We're on a 2.5-year cycle now.
Right.
They're getting rid of the wine at 2.5 years. I mean, you can't drink a 2.5-year-old Cabernet. That's ridiculous. So here's Pinot Noir that needs 10. And it's being released in a year and 2 months.
And the other thing that drives that is the publications. They're doing their 2000 and X wrap up for Pinot, and
sure,
if you want to be included, you can't send them a wine that isn't released because they won't talk about it. So
right,
it's a little bit of cat and mouse trying to hold on to. So we do have at least the sparkling we held on to till it was ready, and we've got a wine it's all Pinot, but it's called Transverse, and it basically, it ignores all AVA boundaries, all vineyard boundaries, and it's all about just trying to encapsulate what each year's Pinot vintage is about. And we hold that for an extra 18 months before we release it, specifically for those reasons. So you can see how balanced and the overall wine, it's not just the fruit up front.
Alan Baker is here from Cartograph Wines. I know I asked you last time, but it's been a while. The name, Cartograph. Explain
it. So it's a radio moment here where our label, the logo that is on the label of our traditional labels is a globe with 5 points on it with the lines connecting those points, and those points are the 5 points that Serena, my partner, now my wife, and I kind of put pushpins in a globe, and those are the places that got us into wine. So we have this whole map thing going on. So we took the word cartography, map making, study of maps, and just dropped the Y. Because we had the image before we had the name.
I do remember that now, that explanation.
It's funny, though, because, you know, we'll be pouring at one of those big events at Fort Mason in San Francisco, and you'll tell the story and tell the points, and, you know, a year later you're at that same event, and you'll see them coming a football field away. They're dragging somebody. They come up to the table. They grab the bottle. They tell the story. They'll get 2 of 5 points, right? But that's a marketing win as far as I'm concerned.
There you go. It is Alan Baker, winemaker, co-founder of Cartograph Wines. Their tasting room just off the plaza in Healdsburg.
Yes, downtown.
And open when to win?
7 days a week from noon until 6 p.m.
Okay. Very good. All right. First part of California Wine Country brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. Our guest today is Alan Baker, back with us from Cartograph Wines, and of course Dan Berger, my co-host. Don't forget about the podcast. If you miss any California Wine Country episodes, all you got to do is go to any place where all fine podcasts are offered, and that's a lot of different places. Or you can easily just go to calwinecountry.com, calwinecountry.com, and Dan Berger's here to say...
Subscribe if you can.
Subscribe if you can.
And of course you can.
And of course you can, and it doesn't cost you anything, and you get the, from what I understand, you get the shows onto your phone if you subscribe.
That's the word.
I don't know. I'm so clueless. But anyway, yeah, calwinecountry.com or anywhere great podcasts are offered. Before we hit the break... Dan?
Quickly, when a new winery starts up, there's always a question as to whether you should play with this variety or that variety. A lot of people like to play with at least one white that doesn't have any particular competitiveness to the big giant wineries that are everybody's making Chardonnay, everybody's making Sauvignon Blanc. You try to reinvent the wheel with those people, and you're up against a marketing force that you don't want to deal with. So Alan really started investigating some of the cooler climate white wines from Europe, and he's done some really nice things. We saw him at the Alsace Festival a couple of years ago, and you've got a great Gewürztraminer. Tell us
about
the Gewürz.
Yeah, the Gewürz is, it's a traditional Gewürz, but it's fermented completely dry, and I think we may have tasted it on a previous show as well.
I think you're right.
And... it's a bit of a hand sell, so it's totally dry, and the vineyard is in just this great little pocket of the Russian River Valley that's not too hot and not too cold, so it gets this really beautiful aromatic quality. You get tons of aromatics without the sugar going through the roof on you, so the alcohol's low.
At the Alsace Festival a couple of years ago, we tried it with some smoked sturgeon. It was sublime. Such a fabulous dish to go with. Great dry white wine that has real, honest to goodness, aromatics that you don't have to manipulate. It's right there. The grapes are you smell that glass, you think you're smelling the grapes.
Yeah, it's the only grape that I know of that if you pluck it off the vine, you're like, that's Gewürz. Like you just the rose petal, the honeysuckle,
really?
It's all right
it's
there.
Just astounding.
It's amazing.
Wow.
And then, of course, the Riesling you're making. Now, tell us a little bit about the Riesling.
Riesling is from the Mendocino Ridge AVA. And it is also dry, stainless steel. And it's the same kind of thing. We found a vineyard that could do these amazing aromatics. And it's 40-plus-year-old Riesling vines, I think some of the oldest Riesling in Mendocino County.
Wow.
Great stuff. This is a really fun project, and I think when you meet Alan, you'll see the enthusiasm that really counts for what these wines are all about. This is good. And the one when we get back from the break, this Pinot is sublime.
This is the estate?
Cartograph Estate, 16 as well.
Oh, okay. Wow. I can't wait to hear how it differs from the other 16 that we tasted. All right. It is part two of California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. Today, Dan Berger brought in Alan Baker. Let me restate that. It's not like he found him on the street and said, Alan, since you're in the neighborhood, why don't you come in and bring some wine? It is our guest today, Alan Baker, winemaker and co-founder of Cartograph Wines, cartographwines.com. Check them out. Their tasting room is just off the plaza in Healdsburg.
Yes, right downtown.
Open 7 days a week?
7 days, noon to 6 p.m.
Beautiful. Okay, so we tasted that one Pinot.
Yes, the first Pinot was an isolated clone, which is the 777 clone, a mutation of within the Pinot family.
And Dan wanted to delay that down for a long time, or decant it for a couple
decant
hours.
Decant it would be good for both of these wines, but this one is really more together. In a certain way, this is more approachable, the second one.
Yeah, the clone specifics have a lot of elbows and knees sticking out still. Like, they're all very specific, and we released them early because they lose the distinguishing factors as they age, and the vineyard always wins, right? So, but the wine that's in your glass now is the 2016 Cartograph Estate blend. So this has some of the clone we tasted, along with four other clones. Probably about 10 different fermentations went into blending this wine from that vineyard.
It's quite complex wine. It's not as explosive as some people might expect for a fine wine like this, because typically those other wines, you know, the ones that sell for $100 a bottle, a lot of them have a lot more oak character in the front, and you get a little more of the smoke or the chocolate or whatever it is. And I think in this case, you're dealing with a winemaker who is really trying to pull the reins way back on the oak and trying to let the fruit really be the dominant feature of the wine. But when it's this young, it doesn't have anything to lean on.
Right.
And so there's no oak there to lean on, so therefore the wine needs to have that time or the aeration. So you put it in a decanter for a couple of hours, and then it will show all those beautiful fruit components, which are already there, but you just can't see.
Yeah,
you got to get me a decanter.
Well, I'll get you the decanter. Yeah, I'll bring it in next week.
every week, I think, I got to get a decanter, and then I
and then we'll do
on
it on the air.
Yeah, you should. It's a branding opportunity. You can sell those things.
Yeah, there you go. The drive decanters.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is lovely as well, and this is lower alcohol than the other one, which wasn't high alcohol.
No, the other one was 13.9. This is 13.6, and
jeez.
I think the lower alcohols do have a tendency to allow some of the fruit components to jump out of the glass a little bit sooner, so that is one of the benefits of having a young wine like this. If you'd held this for two more years, you would have lost one of the components that is part of the wine right now, and that is that aromatic sort of spice component, which is there and will be somewhat transitory. In 6 to 10 years, that wine will lose some of its spice and become more aromatically leaning on the fruit.
And it's a funny thing, because you normally think about kind of the early release wines being so fruit forward, and that fruit backs off, which the fruit is going to back off, but it turns into a different kind of fruit experience, a little more round on the palate. A little farther back on the palate.
And you have to also remember one thing that people forget. The higher the alcohol, the less aromatic the wine tends to be. Higher alcohols have their own aromatics that have nothing to do with fruit. If you smell a glass of vodka, you're going to smell something. It's the alcohol you're smelling. You put a couple of drops of that into your wine, and all it does is cover up the flavors of the fruit.
I've never done that experiment.
Well, I did it. It's shocking. You don't want to drink that.
Don't do that. When you do this, that happens. Don't do that.
I think what's nice about...
Yes, Doc, it hurts when I do this. Well, don't do that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is that what I like about what Alan's been doing is trying to capture the natural varietal character along with the regional, the vineyard character. So if you got a little bit of both, when the wine is this young, that as the time goes by, you buy one vintage and the next vintage. After a while, you get to know these vineyards for what they will give you, plus the varietal, what that does in that region.
And that's a huge part. And I appreciate you recognizing that, because that's a huge part of what we're about. And that is Pinot Noir and Riesling in particular are maybe not so much Gewürztraminer, but Pinot and Riesling are those two of the most transparent grape varieties to work with. They tell you where they come from. They tell you what they've experienced in their life. Like, every time you touch a barrel, you know you've touched it. So our whole thing is about minimum intrusion into the process, and just trying to stay back and act more as a shepherd rather than a heavy-handed, you know. If it's all about my barrel program and the oak, I've done something wrong.
One other thing, which is sort of subtle, but it's important to me, for the last several years, maybe decades, I've been thinking very seriously about what constitutes a great wine. And in my estimation, it's always in a region that's cool. And I don't know of any warm or excessively warm regions where you can consistently find a great wine. Now, the one example that I can think that is that, which is the warmer region producing greatness, is Grange from Australia, because that stuff's Barossa Valley, basically, and that Grange is consistent.
Hot.
But you also have to remember, those winemakers are trained and trained and trained and trained to the point where it's been drummed into their head so long, and you don't get to make Grange unless you've been with that company for about, 20 years?
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I can't imagine. It's just a totally different environment than I'm used to.
Yeah.
You know? But, I mean, that is why we chose Pinot Noir, because I believe very strongly that portions of the Russian River Valley and Mendocino County can grow grapes that can compete at the very highest level with all other wine-growing regions.
And there's one other thing that people forget also, and that is that with this first wine that we tasted, you made a total of a lot of this wine. You made 3 barrels.
Yes.
When you talk about Napa Valley Cabernet
Sauvignon. Dan being facetious.
Well,
just wanted to point that out.
When you talk about Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon, there isn't very many people who are making, 75 cases. They're making thousands and thousands of cases. But part of the reason is that Cabernet Sauvignon is a very forgiving grape variety.
Absolutely.
And you can play with it and play with it, and it still turns out great. Whereas with Pinot Noir, you play with it and it says, goodbye, I'm leaving town.
Exactly. It's done with you. It's off. Yeah, the very first wine I made was a Syrah. And talk about a grape that can take some handling. And it kind of wants to be beat up a little bit because it's not happy just sitting in the barrel by itself.
Yeah.
What about Chardonnays? We've talked about some of the white wines, but I'm a Chardonnay guy.
Yeah, and doing Pinot, it's kind of expected that you also have a Chardonnay.
Yeah,
and
it's
just not enough of a passion of mine that I want to spend like my nights worrying about it and my days talking about it.
I understand.
I love – there's some beautiful Chardonnays, and we drink Chardonnay quite a bit. But I just felt like if we were going to do a Chardonnay, it would be kind of in that Chablis style, probably either stainless or concrete fermented, and we'd have yet another – oddball wine that we had to sell one bottle at a time out of the tasting room, because it doesn't necessarily meet expectations of the traditional Russian River Chardonnay. So we've so far held off.
And there are a lot of people who are making these alternate varieties as part of their club programs because they need wines for the clubs. And so they'll say, well, we'll throw him, let's give him a little bit of Sylvaner. I say, well, is it? Yeah, Sylvaner, it's a great variety. I love the wine, but The problem is that these are wines that are done primarily because the club needs something different. They can't continue to sell them, we'll have another Chardonnay for you. Another Chardonnay. Everybody's got another Chardonnay.
Yep.
Again, it's cartographwines.com, and it's you're not going to find it except in their tasting room.
At least in the area, yes, and local restaurants, Healdsburg in particular.
Oh, you do have some local restaurants.
Yes,
I meant to ask that.
And that's a good point to make, too, is that these wines are based upon good quality acidity, not added from a bag, but naturally chosen out of the vineyard, so that these wines will really go with food early on. So you don't have to worry about the fact that they were early released as long as you're having them with food. If you drink them early, just make sure there's food on the table.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. The tasting room, where you can get all the great Cartograph wines, is just off the square in Healdsburg on Center Street.
On Center, yes. Yeah. 340 Center.
Noon to 6, 7 days a week. What's coming up with Cartograph? What's 2019 look
like? Wow, so 2000, this year was the first year that we released wines from our estate vineyard. The big kind of news vineyard-wise is we're going to start a replant program in our vineyard to just get some viticulture practices in there that match the growing conditions. It's so cold out there that we've got we've got plenty of vigor, but our rootstock doesn't match what's above ground. So we're going to fix that, get a good match in there. And
one thing that I do want to, we don't want to get too technical and too geeky here, but we all have talked about global warming. Well, the word warming is somewhat of a misnomer. It's a general overall trend, probably a decade or 10 decades, whatever, of general increasing temperatures. But in the middle of this whole thing, we've got a lot of cooler years and years that are aberrational. And one of the reasons that 2011 and 2010 in particular, those two, and then maybe a couple of others, were so cool is because of global climate change. That's a better phrase. Global warming is a little bit a misnomer.
I agree, because it is climate change. Yeah. It's not necessarily just warming. It's everything.
Yeah, and when somebody says, well, you know, it was really cold today, how could it be global warming?
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, you know who says that?
Yeah.
The man in D.C.
We don't talk about
who somebody elected.
I don't talk about that.
I don't know how. Well,
but you also have, like, crazy, just especially, like, people who don't live in Northern California don't understand just how the topography of the land is so important to where you can do what. With what grape or whatever your crop is. And especially in our estate vineyard, when it's really hot, when it's just baking inland, the convection, as that air rises, it pulls air and the marine layer off of the ocean into our vineyard. So everybody else is baking, and we're 10 degrees below what we would expect.
Gotcha.
So we're cold. And so this year, our you know, any consultant that would come into our vineyard couldn't believe we were 2 weeks behind their coldest vineyard somewhere else.
Like, well. One good example of that is anybody who buys Riesling from Australia knows that Clare Valley is called Clare Valley. Well, this is a mile high or about a half a mile high valley. This is way out there, and it's way up there. It's a valley, yeah. But
where is it again?
It's in Barossa. But the Clare Valley,
that's Clare, a suburb of Pengrove, isn't it?
Eden Valley is what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Eden Valley is way up there, and it's really high. So if you talk about a valley, it doesn't mean to say every valley is the same. Some valleys are really, really altitude driven. There's a woman in Colorado who's growing a Gewürztraminer at 6,000 feet altitude. She's way above a mile.
Which means
you got a cold climate no matter what. You say about that climate.
Is that going to be any good?
It's fabulous. That Gewürz is one of the best I've ever tasted. It's called Terror Creek.
Terror Creek. As in, I can't believe my vines are going to make it through this winter.
That's right.
I'm terrified.
When you're at 6,000 feet, you make what nature gives you.
Wow. It's so cool. I love this show. California Wine Country with Dan Berger, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. Barry Herbst, wine buyer at Bottle Barn, was going to call in today, but this is the busiest couple weeks for all those folks.
I bet he's slammed.
Oh, yeah. So,
and they've got a new project going, as you know. If you haven't checked it out, go online to bottlebarn.com, I think it is, and see that new program of theirs, because it's really exciting, because some of the wines can be shipped no charge.
Right, all over the place.
What?
Yeah. They've spent a year putting this all together. Huh. They built a separate thing, like a little down the street for this whole program.
Well, I went online just to see what was going on, and they had a couple of wines there that were so cheap it's ridiculous. And then I said, well, that's pretty cheap. And then they said, yeah, free shipping, too. I said, excuse me, you can't make any money on this. He says, don't worry about us. We're doing okay.
Yeah, they're doing okay.
The important thing is you have to say shipping included.
There we go.
Because free shipping is absolutely illegal.
Yeah.
Shipping included.
Okay, there we go.
I'm sure they've figured that out.
These ridiculous rules. Yeah, no, I'm sure they've got it figured out. But it's,
all right. So it's stop saying that, Dan.
Okay, all right.
I don't want to get you in trouble.
Subscribe. All right.
Shipping included. Yeah, and subscribe. Alan Baker from Cartograph Wines, cartographwines.com. You're doing a great job.
Thank you, Steve.
As Dan has said, a wonderful project.
Thanks.
Best to you and your new wife, Serena Laurie.
Which I am getting texts of people that are listening saying, what? I don't deserve to know?
Yeah. You got married? He said it was breaking news an hour ago on the show. So congratulations to both of you.
Thank you.
Everything with Cartograph Wines. Check them out at their tasting room on the plaza there in Healdsburg. CartographWines.com. Because you should join the wine club. You'll get all sorts of great stuff and find out everything about them and what they do at cartographwines.com. Alan, great to see you again.
Thank you. It's good to see you.
Don't be a stranger.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan.
Happy holidays. And, Dan, we'll see you next Thursday.
Next Thursday. And I got somebody lined up who keeps ducking me, but he wants to be here. So.
All right. Apparently, it's Daffy Duck. The renowned winemaker. Mike has got his thumbs in his belt like a gunslinger, and I haven't seen any fingers, so I guess I'm getting the stretch sign. Oh, there are those fingers. Look, there's fingers, people. Countdown with me. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good night.